Welcome. I would like to welcome everybody listening all around the world, all across the United States. We are live from the City of Angels, the bright, shining light that is Coast to Coast AM Studios right here in Los Angeles, California. I'm your host tonight, Jimmy Church, sitting in for George Norrie, taking the night off. And tonight, it's a big one. Tonight, we're going to go where no show ever dares. We're about to go deep into the world of hacking, hacktivism, and Anonymous. Sure, this can be a dark room, everyone, and I understand that. The world of hackers and its culture, well, it's somewhere, it's someplace that most are just not allowed to see, to touch. You can't find it on a map, you can't Google it, but yet the media won't touch it. Countries and their governments are scared of it. Corporations try to hide from it. And individuals who find themselves on the wrong side of morality find out quickly what it really is and what it's like to get exposed. We truly live in a brave new world where there's a new sheriff in town. And one thing is for sure, you must respect it. Now, I just got back from New York City, where I attended the HOPE conference, and that is the Hackers on Planet Earth. And I attended not as a hacker, but as a member of the media with the credentials. And as I walked through this conference with our team, which included producers and assistants and directors and cameras and camera people, into the sea of life that is the hacker world, I found out quickly that I was an outsider, for real. I could feel it. But I wouldn't have done that approach the way we handled it. I wouldn't have done it any other way. I could almost see and feel the protective wall that was instantly put up. They circled the wagons. And it was amazing and beautiful at the same time. And to be honest, I'm kind of lucky I didn't wind up in the East River, but that's a whole nother show. My guest tonight is Greg Hausch. Now, to be clear, there are only a few people on planet Earth who can speak about hacking the deep web and Anonymous from the perspective of being there. And I need to stress that because he was, and he still is. He is truly at the center of it all. Greg spent much of his teens and his early 20s evading an FBI task force while helping to operate the Internet's foremost software pirating rings and living the life of a criminal hacker. And I just spent an entire weekend with Greg. And we hung out in New York and went to the conference, and we rode around in cabs and talked. And he is truly one of the most fascinating people I have ever met. And tonight, the Coast family will get to meet the real Greg Hausch. And his reasons for agreeing on coming on to Coast tonight, well, that may surprise you too. And I'm going to let him tell you that story. But before we get to Mr. Hausch, I have the one and only Dave Schrader on the line. And it's something that doesn't happen too often here on Coast. So right now, we're going to do a little host-to-host on Coast to Coast. Dave, good evening.
Hey, Jimmy, thanks for having me.
How are you, my friend? What's going on out there in your world?
Doing great. Again, I'm going to be visiting with Coast tomorrow night, hosting the show. We're going to take a darker look at Bigfoot and strange, mysterious cryptid encounters. So we'll be dipping into that tomorrow. But I also wanted to mention, you know, I think you talked to John Edmonds from the Stardust Ranch.
Absolutely, right, absolutely. Right.
And we had him on our show on Darkness Radio, and this guy had such a bizarre, fascinating story. He was either completely crazy, or he was completely dealing with something unnatural.
For 20 years, too.
Right. And I work as a location scout for Travel Channel on the TV series Ghost Adventures, and the team had reached out. They said, you know, we'd love to visit someplace like a Skinwalker Ranch. Do you know of anything? And I just talked to John regarding his encounters. And And the encounters are plenty. And I mean, there's everything from cryptids to aliens to demonic attacks and ghosts that are seen in this property. So I talked to them about it. They heard the show, and they asked me to be a part of the episode with them. So earlier this year, we went out and filmed over a period of 3 or 4 days at the ranch to put this guy to the test. And certainly, I'm not going to lie to you, Jimmy. I mean, you remember the claims this guy made, everything from decapitating aliens with a samurai sword to
right.
his wife levitating in the bed and being molested by alien encounters. And we went out and had some very strange activity take place during the filming of this series.
I know it airs tomorrow night, but can
right.
you give me a little sneak taste of what we can expect? How did Zach deal with it?
You know what I really loved about the fact, if viewers have watched with Zach on the Travel Channel, you know, a lot of the times he goes into these, you know, he has a belief in the paranormal and you know, goes in with eyes and heart open to see what happens. But when he hears some of these claims, you see him, you know, vividly turn to the camera and like, what am I listening to? Is this, can this even be possible? And then bizarre things begin to happen. Aaron and I, just as a deal, as everybody was setting up, I love to skywatch. I'm just staring out into this beautiful, vast, dark sky. And Aaron Goodwin from the show walks up next to me and he goes, hey, buddy, you see anything? And as he looks up, at the same time, this white ball of light comes jettisoning across the sky, doubles back, and then swings around. And the two of us lost our minds. It was the most unbelievable phenomena. And, of course, it's not while we're filming. We're just in the midst of getting set up for this. And that was just the beginning of our night. There was a lot of different things that went on, a lot of encounters. And to say they put me in one of the most uncomfortable positions in my life is an understatement.
Now,
I had to do something on this episode that was very outside my comfort zone. So I'm hoping that the viewers enjoy it, and I think it's going to deliver. It's a really intriguing look at some really large claims, and I think we walk away with a much more open mind. Plus, we're visited by Travis Walton from Fire in the Sky, weighs in on some of the encounters that were going on there, and we get his input. So it's kind of a fascinating look at the whole thing, and I'm looking forward to the Coast listeners checking it out, and let me know what you think.
Well, you've got a pretty exciting Saturday ahead of you.
Right. Yeah, we've got a lot going on tomorrow. We've got the Art of Darkness, a paranormal art show here in Minnesota. We've got people from 20 different states, 3 different countries have contributed paranormal-themed art. I'll be doing that from 6 to 9, then 9 o'clock to 10 is the Ghost Adventures on Travel Channel. And then, of course, I'll be stepping in for Coast to Coast tomorrow from midnight till 4 a.m. Central. So it's a jam-packed full night, and I'm looking forward to talking with the listeners about all of it as it occurs.
Man, I want to be Dave Schrader.
Oh, it's wearing me out, I'll tell you that.
Hey, Dave, thank you so much for all that you do. And I can't wait to watch Ghost Adventures tomorrow night because Zach and Aaron, they don't really do the UFO side of things. And the ranch out there with John has got a little bit of everything. So right. That's going to be a different show for them to do. And I'm excited to see it. And I look forward to seeing you too as well.
Well, thank you, Jimmy. And thank you to the Coast listeners. I'll be back with you tomorrow night.
Thank you so much, Dave. Dave Schrader. Tomorrow night, Ghost Adventures. Yeah, he's got a full Saturday night ahead of him. Thank you, Dave. He's one of the best hosts, co-hosts that we have here at Coast to Coast. And it's kind of strange to be able to do a host-to-host on Coast to Coast. Well, here it is. It's Friday night. And sometimes we do need to unplug from the machine. And I talk about it a lot on this show. But tonight, we're going to do the opposite. We're going to be plugging in. It is the deep web. It is the dark net. Hackers, hacktivism, and anonymous. Get ready. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, sitting in for George Norrie tonight, who's taking a night off. You can follow me right now on Twitter. You know the drill, at J Church Radio. For any questions or comments during the show, I run it in real time, full interactive. I do keep Twitter running to my left. I'll be right back with my guest, Greg Hausch. Stay right there. Welcome back to Coast. I'm sitting in for George Norrie tonight. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Greg Hausch spent much of his teens and early 20s invading an FBI task force while helping to operate the Internet's foremost software pirating rings and otherwise living the life of a criminal hacker. In 2000, the chase was finally over and he was arrested. The next 7 years were spent in and out of court while he pled guilty to a conspiracy to commit and violate copyright laws in 2007. He was incarcerated in a federal penitentiary, including a 27-day run in solitary. Upon release, he worked a series of computer-related jobs while continuing to participate in various online subcultures. Soon after, his key role in Anonymous's global protest campaign against the Church of Scientology was made public in 2008. Hausch began serving as a media interpreter and interview subject for newspapers, websites, radio, and television. Today, he is a consultant for the hit TV shows Mr. Robot and House of Lies, and he continues to work with Anonymous participants on various operations, offering advice and other forms of support as needed. And I would like to welcome for the first time to Coast, Greg Hausch. Greg, good evening, sir.
Good evening.
How are you, man?
You know, doing good. Do you mind if I open this up with one small correction?
You can do whatever you'd like, Greg. I'm scared.
I wish I was consulting on House of Lies. I think that show's great, but I'm consulting on House of Cards.
House of Cards, House of Lies. You know what's funny? That is called typing too fast.
No problem.
Yeah, thank you for that, Greg. Thank you for that. And now, I wanted to start off here, and I apologize for that. That was me. That wasn't anybody else.
No problem.
When, as you can imagine, what I went through this weekend at the Hope Conference, right, being a guy from the media trying to go in and make nice with a few thousand hackers, and that culture and that subculture that you've been a part of for a long time, I came away from it with such an appreciation of the brotherhood, if you will. And why is it, I have to start right here, why is it that veil is so thick and so strong? They know when somebody like me is an outsider, and they're ready to circle the wagons and protect everybody. And that's exactly what went on. Why is it so strong?
It's a really tough community to get any respect in. And it's a really tough community to get to the point where people trust you enough to consider you friends. The real reason is honestly that, you know, at every turn it's being infiltrated. At every chat you might find yourself at, you know, it's the thing we always say is, if there's more than two people, and you don't know one of them, somebody's a fed. You just have to believe that at this point. And so when new people show up, it's only smart to assume that that person is indeed, you know, not looking out for your best interest. And it takes a while to get past that before someone starts to trust you, starts to believe you, because a lot of the things that we know and a lot of things that we do, illegal or not, the government still doesn't like them.
Let me ask you this, Greg. Do you think at the Hope Conference in New York that there were members of three-letter organizations there that were observing?
Members of those organizations, cooperators with those organizations, absolutely. It's just the thing that you have to assume, especially with the subject matter.
I was trying to, and you and I were talking about this while we were there, you know, and I was trying to locate somebody, you know, I was trying to identify somebody that, and it just made me feel that you just don't know, you know, you just don't know. And you're looking around and everybody else, quite honestly, is doing the same thing. Everybody's looking out the sides of their faces, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and that's kind of the life these people live. I mean, you know, it's not hard to blend in the sense of dressing like those people. I mean, go to a couple of them, get the feel, and then you can show right up. As for the language, I mean, as long as you're a decent enough tech, you can get by on language. With that being the case, it's, you know, it's just safety. You have to watch your back. You know, even if you're not involved in illegal activities, you might be involved in things that the government does not appreciate, such as helping to make Tor's hidden services stronger, building a better anonymity network. They will want to know who's working on those things, and they will want to hear the private conversations about them. So when new people show up, there's just a lot of questions. There's a lot of skepticism, and it just has to be that way, or more people end up in jail.
Right now, I mean, you have been considered, you've been labeled, you went to prison, you know, you're considered like a dangerous guy, right? And do you think that right now they are listening to your phone call and listening to this program, and do you feel that pressure? I mean, are you followed?
So I've gotten actual proof that my phone calls aren't just recorded, but they are actively listened to, in that on two different occasions, I was contacted about stuff that I had said only hours beforehand on my phone with one other person who I know was not a bad guy. So this has happened twice to me. And, you know, I've got to say, at some point, if you're doing the stuff I'm doing, you give up on that stuff. It's so I'm being followed. So they're listening. Well, I'm doing my best not to actually break the law. I'm doing my best to do everything I can within the letter of the law and still get stuff done. And if they want to hear everything I'm doing, well, fine. Everyone talking to me should know that that's probably the case.
Yeah, when I talk to you on the phone now, I'm totally thinking, I'm censoring myself. And I find myself doing that. And what about the next step for you? How do you text? How do you send and receive email? Do you do everything encrypted?
For texting, you know, if it's just with my mother, of course, I just send a text. I mean, who really cares about that? But if I'm texting with someone else who I, you know, need to say something private to, I use Signal by, you know, it's using the protocol by Whisper Systems there. And I think it's a sturdy protocol. It's peer reviewed. It has been tested more than enough. And in the end, it's been chosen by a lot of big providers. It is right now, I think, the best we have. You know, there's other tools like Telegram, and those tools have been broken and been proven to not be safe. So I stick to at least the one that I know enough security professionals have reviewed and said, you know, to their best knowledge, it's good. So for that, I use Signal.
If you receive a text that's not encrypted, does that raise a red flag to you?
Depends on the content, of course. But if it's from someone I'm used to getting things encrypted from, then it's instantaneously a red flag. The first thing I say is, hit me up over where we normally talk. And if that doesn't happen, then you have to get suspicious at that point.
I want to talk a little bit about Mr. Robot before we head to the break. Mr. Robot is a strong show. Strong. How accurate is that for the hacker subculture, for those that don't know anything about it? They see it, they're creeped out about it, and that, you know, because it's just fantastically written. How close is it to the mark?
It's very close. You know, the team there do a really good job. And I was honestly surprised when, you know, the work on the pilot was done and I got to see some pieces of it. I was surprised that USA Networks was willing to allow them to show it in such detail. You know, they got away with actually showing someone rooting their Android phone, start to finish, from scratch, real. That's how you do it. And a lot of times, stuff like that gets censored on television. So the fact that they've been able to do real hacks in front of the audience has made me really happy, because, you know, that's the type of stuff I want people seeing. I don't want people watching, you know, CSI Cyber and seeing red text flying by the screen and thinking that that's actually what happened. You know, that's not real. What Mr. Robot is showing is as close to real as I think you're going to ever see.
When you see, there was one other interesting thing where they were hiding messages in the malware and in the code itself to communicate with each other. Does that actually happen, or is that just drama?
No, that happens. The obfuscation is key to a lot of this stuff. I mean, you find interesting ways that you don't think they're monitoring to get stuff out there. There was one person who used to actually file requests on GitHub, and for any of the users or listeners who might know what that is, it's just a place where you can store the code to your software so anyone can see how your software is written. And they were making little comments on code as if they were offering up suggestions for fixing your software. In reality, if you put it all together and then decrypted it, they were talking to someone. We never found out who they were talking to, but they were sending messages to someone, and you know, it's interesting. People always find new ways to try and hide the information out there that you're just not looking for. And I love watching that because every now and then you see something really genius.
Absolutely. Our guest tonight, Greg Hausch, and we are talking anonymous hacking, hacktivism, the deep web. It's all tonight on Coast to Coast. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. We'll be right back. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, sitting in for George Norrie tonight. My guest, Greg Hausch. And we're going to discuss his key role in Anonymous's global protest campaign, the world of hackers, hacktivism, and the dark deep web, from the man who has been at the center of it all, Greg Hausch. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. I'll be right back. Welcome back to Coast AM, and my guest tonight is Greg Hausch, and we're going to go ahead and we're going to go deep into not only the dark web and hackers and hacktivism, but we're going to discuss a lot about Anonymous that isn't really taken into the public that often. We're going to do all of that tonight with Greg. But Greg, before we start to go there, you told me a story. We're in a cab in New York, and you turn to me and you go, so you host Coast to Coast, and I said, yeah. And you said, I have to share this with you. And you told me the story. Go ahead and tell everybody how you listened to Coast years ago.
So, you know, growing up, I just wasn't into this type of stuff, so I'd never heard of the show, right? And I'd heard of Herself, but I'd never put it together. And I, of course, being a dumb kid who was really good with computers, got myself sent to prison. And while in prison, I was a good little boy, and I got this itty-bitty little radio, and we're talking it's like twice the size of an iPod Shuffle. I mean, this thing is small. And it could only pick up one thing, and I had never heard this show before, and at about 10 o'clock at night, I would be laying there trying to go to sleep on that cold steel, and I'd have the little radio held in my hand, and the literal only show that would come in clear enough to understand what they were saying was Coast to Coast. And so for months on end, all I did was sit there listening to Coast because it was the only show I could get. Luckily, it was entertaining. I mean, I needed something.
And here you are tonight. It's a strange thing how life has its roads that you go down, isn't it?
It really is. I wasn't expecting to end up on the show while I'm sitting there in prison as my only form of entertainment.
You gotta love it. You really do. Now, okay, let's jump in feet first, and I want to start here. How do you go from pizza delivery, right, with Anonymous, to literally changing countries and governments' policy? Did you have any idea that this is where Anonymous would be today?
Absolutely no idea. And the question of how did we get here? An unbelievably long string of accidents and stumbles that somehow ended here. There was no planning. There was no one in any real modicum of control. And every time one of these kind of, I'll call them happy accidents happened, we just seemed to respond correctly and got here. Early on, it was just a few of us. I mean, I can remember before the Chanology fight against Scientology, you know, that the one channel where you could go and find, you know, in air quotes, Anonymous online, there were about eight people, and that was the entirety of it, and for the most part, the entirety of the people who knew who Anonymous was. And it's definitely taken a life of its own at this point.
Do you think if you have the ability, and certainly Anonymous does, but if you have the ability to start to dictate government and world and banking and corporate policy, then certainly you have the power to take over the world. Is that a goal of Anonymous?
Anonymous doesn't have any goals, which is kind of one of its wonderful powers and strengths and weaknesses all rolled into one. You know, Anonymous is doing today whatever someone today asked it to do. And that's about as organized as it's ever going to be. That makes it really hard for it to organize well enough to say, take over the world. I mean, that's definitely something that I can't see it staying organized and or friendly enough to do. Anonymous's worst enemy has always been anonymous. More Anons get attacked by Anons than government officials on a daily basis. We used to say Anonymous eats its own babies. You know, that was kind of our term for how much Anonymous would attack Anonymous.
And then you have the situation where you have direct, and I'll say it right now, FBI, NSA, CIA involvement, where some of what Anonymous and some of those ops were influenced by what the FBI and what the CIA needed to get done. And now, how do you explain that? Because it's kind of a paradox.
You know, it is definitely a paradox in that because the way we kind of worked it and the way Anonymous was sold to the world, that this idea that anyone at any time could be anonymous and that anyone can use the name, put on the mask, throw up the logo, make a video, do an ominous voice, and suddenly you are anonymous. And no one owns it, and no one can tell you not to. That leads to infiltration. That leads to the FBI being able to use the name just as fast as you can use the name. And the one thing that people using this name and or deciding to join an op or take part in anything really need to think about is this op something that you can get behind? And is this op something that you think isn't being run by the feds? And, you know, the second you get any kind of a feel that this might be wrong, start talking to people about it. I mean, the people in these groups are used to that conversation. There's nothing that's going to stop them from using the name, just like we can't stop anyone else from using the name. You just have to be wary. You just have to be on your toes and watching out for it.
Today, Greg, and this is a direct question, who is a member of Anonymous? Do you have to necessarily be a hacker first, or is that now a small part of what Anonymous is about? And are the backgrounds varied?
You know, the backgrounds are really varied. This question comes up a lot, especially from people asking, you know, what could I possibly do because I'm not a hacker? The reality is that most people who have ever associated with Anonymous aren't. The largest op I ever saw happen was during the fight against PayPal, MasterCard, and Visa over them cutting off WikiLeaks. And the only real numbers we could pull to try and figure out just how many people were taking part was how many people downloaded the tool that Anonymous was giving out to attack those companies. And the download numbers were just over 60,000 unique downloads from different people. And from the various questions being asked by the people using this tool, you could tell that there were maybe 20 of those people who were hackers, and the rest were honestly your grandparents. The amount of emails that came in on some of those kind of known anonymous websites, like Why We Protest and Anonymous, that were all capped from an AOL address that was like marcy@AOL.com, and you could tell it was someone's, you know, 80-year-old grandma. It was surprising to me, like, you know, so you see everyone from the 12-year-old kid who finds this, you know, fascinating and new as they're starting to, you know, explore the world. And then you find the people who just get outraged at an event in the world and want to do what they can and see Anonymous, you know, doing something about it and try and join up. And they might not have those hacking skills, but those hacking skills aren't what's really needed. I mean, The types of skills that are needed are writing skills, are graphic skills, are video skills, are media skills. Nothing that Anonymous does and nothing that really any hacker group does means anything if the general public doesn't hear about it and doesn't, you know, see what's going on and hear the truth. So that's a much harder task than even the hack. Getting someone to cover it, getting the news to pay attention. Like, there are so many skill sets necessary for Anonymous to pull off the things that it does that have nothing to do with hacking. So, in general, when you see an op happen, even if it's 20, 30 people, there might be 1, 2, 3 real hackers out of that total number of people, and the rest are either trying to learn how to do that or one of those other skill sets. And those other skill sets are just as needed as the hackers.
Do you find it shocking or surprising that you would have POTUS or a meeting of some very high brain power in Washington sitting around and discussing Anonymous? Is that surprising to you?
In 2008, 2007, when we were kind of, you know, a very small group of people, that kind of changeover from December to January there, 07, 08, it would have surprised the heck out of me. There were 8 or 9 people at any given time, at any given day there, that had any clue who Anonymous were. These days, though, you know, you can look back over the last decade, and you can find paperwork from NATO where they put out bulletins about, you know, being at war with Anonymous. And so it wouldn't surprise me at all. And I've had, you know, conversations. I've been on the phone and done interviews with the Justice Oversight Committee after Aaron Swartz ended his life. And so it's reached the highest levels of power in the world. The IMF put out a bulletin a few years ago about Anonymous and about its effect on, you know, global policy. So, yeah, there's not much that's going to surprise me at this point.
And then recently, all of the ops and op ISIS and what you guys were doing with Twitter to pull down all of that social media, massive successes in that realm. Did Twitter approach you, or do you know of Twitter trying to contact Anonymous saying, you know what, we're going to let you guys do your thing?
Twitter was being what I'll call nice with the few accounts that were really leading the fight. There were a couple accounts like ControlSec and those on Twitter that were the ones getting all the information out about Op ISIS, you know, for a solid year before Paris ever happened or any of those other attacks really happened, where the media started to pay attention to Op ISIS. It was going on, you know, a good 9 months before all of that. And Twitter, you know, the way that account was acting, the things it was saying and the things it was asking people to do, sometimes your account will get banned for that, for those actions. Those accounts were being left alone. They were being allowed to do the things they were doing. And that was really good to see, because I, in the end, think that a lot of good was done there.
I want to talk really quick. Everybody wants to know, and I know you get asked about the Guy Fawkes mask all the time. So I'm going to save that question for a minute. But let's back up to the original We Are Legion presentation that happened back in 08 and the Code of Conduct video. Do you know who was behind that mask in those videos?
I do.
Oh, I knew you. I know you're not going to tell me. I would love for you to. Was it you?
I know who was behind that mask, and that's about all I'm willing to say.
Fair enough. Were you there when it was filmed?
Yes.
Do you have the original mask?
Yes.
Do you ever wear it around the house?
No, I can see it sitting over across the room, though.
You know I want to see it. I already asked you once about that.
I'll take a picture of it and send it over to you.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Where did the idea for the... I know it came from V for Vendetta, obviously, but who suggested it? Was it you? Were you guys just sitting around? And did you have other alternative masks that you were thinking about using?
Yeah, you know, this is one of my favorite little stories to tell, because it kind of speaks to more practicality and less romanticism, you know, especially when it comes to Guy Fawkes himself.
Do it.
When we were first trying to figure out this Anonymous thing and what it was going to look like and what it was going to be, we realized quickly that we had told the world that it was time to go outside and protest, but we were telling them to do it as Anonymous. And about a week before our first global protest in February of 2008, we realized we had made a horrible mistake. We had not told everyone what mask to use. And you have to really present a unified, you know, look and feel to honestly get any press coverage, but also really feel like a unit, like you're one, like you're working towards a common goal. And so we sat back and out that little group of about eight of us that had really kind of started a lot of this, five of us went off to the side to work on what mask we were going to, you know, ask people to use, and the others kept working on the next video. And we're sitting there in an IRC channel, which is Internet Relay Chat. It's a place where a lot of this type of work goes on the Internet. It's the chat system that's been around since actually the late 80s. It's a very old chat system in terms of Internet time anyways. And we're on this chat channel, and we start thinking that we need one mask. We're a week out. What are our suggestions? The Guy Fawkes mask gets added to the list pretty quickly because not only B for Vendetta, but it was actually a running joke on 4chan, one of the initial websites where Anonymous kind of, you know, showed up. And it just, you know, it had a look. But it wasn't a default choice. It wasn't instantaneous, let's use this mask like a lot of people love to tell the world. It's that was not the case. We ended up choosing a Batman mask, old school masquerade mask with a little stick that you hold up, you know.
Right.
There was a list originally of about 10, but within, you know, half an hour, it was down to about 5. And then we had a realization. I said into the IRC channel that we have a problem. This mask has to exist all across the world in every major city that we're going to protest in 7 days, or if this doesn't work.
I didn't even think about that. Right.
We don't have time for shipping.
Right.
It can't be expensive. Protesters usually don't have much money. So, you know, anyone who's going to go out needs to be able to afford this thing. So what we did is we stayed up for hours, a day and a half, in fact, calling comic book shops and costume shops from Sydney to Melbourne to Perth down there in Australia, all the way to Tel Aviv, to all the way over to Paris, to New York, all the way until we made it to Los Angeles. No sleep. And the one thing we learned is every major city on the planet had a lot of these Guy Fawkes masks in stock. Turns out Warner Brothers had printed a ton of them, thinking that V for Vendetta would make everyone want one.
Right
and
on.
It hadn't worked out so well for them. So these masks were in stock everywhere, and they were cheap. And so we really had no other choice. It was the only mask I could actually say, this is what we've got to use.
And what's fascinating about that, take me through as we lead into this break, that 12-hour to 24-hour period as things started to unfold that day when you didn't know if one person was going to show up, you know, in Sydney and in London, you know, if there was going to be two. And it turned out to absolutely spin out of control. What was that 12-hour period like?
I'll tell you, the worst part about our planning for this is just how fast and accidental everything was. You know, we didn't have time to think about any of this. So the night before the first protest I was going to go to, you know, living in Boston, I was going to go to the Boston one. And it's about 8 o'clock at night when someone on IRC informs us, hey, we're all dumb. In Sydney, Australia, it's protest time in 1 hour. So we can actually follow along if they're posting anything on the internet and get a feel for how this might look for us in the morning. And of course we're like, oh, this is wonderful. And we set up a channel on IRC called Reports, and people started posting from Sydney. And again, 2008 till now doesn't seem like that long of a time for people, but 2008, most people didn't have phones with good cameras or fast enough internet to be uploading photos.
Let me jump in right there, Greg. We'll pick this up on the other side of the break. Our guest tonight, Greg Hausch. We're talking about Anonymous and the days when everything kicked off. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, sitting in for George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM.